This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Boy, my throat's going. Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I just have to say, before I introduce my guest, hello to my brother. I looked at my phone this morning and I saw that in Baraga, Michigan, it was 0 degrees. Zero. So I couldn't feel upset that we are a little bit cold here in the 50s. Anyway, good morning to my brother up there in Michigan, who I know is drinking coffee at this very moment, because that's what we do in northern Michigan. We are youpers. So, but now I want to get to something, and I'm going to be talking about coffee again later on in the program because I drink a lot of coffee too. But right now I have to turn to a very, very important author, and she has written an incredible book. It's really quite amazing, and I am so thrilled to welcome to Joy on Paper, Betty Kearse. Hello, Betty.
Good morning, Patsy.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about your wonderful book, The Other Madisons, The Lost History of a President's Black Family. This is such an important book, and I am so glad that I'm getting it on here toward the end of 2020. We're almost finished with this year, which has been just so crazy, and the subject is so important. And you have written a book that is so full of strength and courage that I feel really honored that you are with me today on Joy on Paper.
Well, I'm honored to be here as well.
You know, this book, we're talking here about a subject that's so important. We need to, for everybody in America, to understand the entire sort of the gravity of what happened with slavery in this country and how we have to look at it and how we should think about it. And you have taken on the job of, you'll explain what you've done here with this book. You talk here about the African tradition of a griot and a storyteller. Now, you were born to do this book because you are one of the best writers I have spoken to all year. Amazingly talented.
Thank you.
Wow. Beautiful writing. You capture the story. We're going to start with the story of Mandy. So I'll let you set the scene for it, because at the beginning of the book, you have here a family tree of the Madisons, and then you have a family tree. And then you talk about where your family fits in, and it all starts with one girl. So why don't you set the scene for us?
All right. Well, Mandy was a young woman, maybe in her teens, and she was a girl who loved the ocean, and she would sneak away and spend time there in the water, enjoying feeling the power of the ocean around her. And she would often go alone, even when she was supposed to be in her village.
Are you there? Oh, boy. All right, we got cut off somehow. Okay, Ed, we're going to have to get her back on the line. Hopefully she's going to be right back. And there she is, coming back. This is the nature of live radio, that sometimes we just, little gremlins get in there. But she's calling right back, and here we are. Okay, I'm sorry about that. I don't know what happened. It wasn't at our end. We were working here to keep you on. But Betty Kearse, why don't you start over with your story about Mandy?
Yes, I'm sorry we got disconnected. But Mandy was a young woman who loved the ocean, and she would often go there alone and enjoy the feel of the power of the ocean, how the sun was beating down on her. And she would often supposed to be taking care of some responsibilities, and so she would sneak away. And one day, some men came, a ship came, and she was captured. And she was taken across the Atlantic Ocean in the bowels of a wretched slave ship and ended up in Virginia.
Now, tell us the country where she was, the shoreline that she was on.
She was in Ghana, West Africa. That's what we call that area now. But at that time, it was just part of the ancient kingdom of Ghana.
And there she was looking at the beautiful ocean, and it is beautiful from, you know, from that west coast of Africa. All of the ocean is, it's amazing sight. And to see that beauty and to know in a few minutes later she's in a slave ship, it is, you paint that picture so indelibly in our minds. And once she got, was, I don't know how much you want to talk about the slave ship itself.
Well, it was a wretched experience. People were chained together and forced to lie on planks that were kind of stacked up like shelves. And there was only about 3 or 4 feet between each shelf. So it was difficult to stand up. You just had to lie there. And, you know, you really couldn't move. You couldn't breathe. The odors of sweat, feces, vomit, and the sounds of people sobbing and moaning and screaming, and, you know, just the clashing of the chains. It was just a horrible experience, a feeling of complete loss and aloneness. And the trip would last anywhere from 1 month to 4 months. It could be a very long experience, but no matter how long it was grueling. And, you know, eventually they would land, and Mandy went to Virginia and was probably sold in Fredericksburg, which is not far from Montpelier, which was James Madison Sr.'s plantation. So Mandy was actually purchased by James Madison Sr. And after she kind of was allowed to adjust and was taken in by the slave community and sort of taught what was expected of her, the main thing that she had to learn that she was no longer free, and that she was under the ownership of someone. A person owned another person. And according to our family oral history, Mandy was sent to a remote cotton field, which is rather unusual because Virginia was a tobacco state. But that is where James Madison Sr. first saw her. And as the story goes, he became attracted to her because she could pick cotton so fast. And so you can just imagine this young, kind of sinuously strong woman going up and down the cotton fields, picking cotton while this man, probably on horseback, watched her. Well, eventually he took physical advantage of her, and the result was the birth of a daughter whose name was Corrine. Now, James Madison Sr. was married to Nellie Conway Madison, and she had a child who was James Madison Jr., the person who would become the future fourth president of the United States. And when they grew up, James Madison Jr. became attracted to Corrine. Corrine was at that time a cook, and he would see her walking to and from the kitchen, which is about 70 feet away from the mansion, and he would see her walking back and forth, you know, serving food to the Madisons and their many guests. Now, he was also married. He was married to Dolly Payne Todd Madison, and they did not have any children together, and he very much wanted his own child. She had a child by a previous marriage, Payne Todd, but James Madison Jr. wanted his own child. So he, similar to what his father did, took physical advantage of Corrine, and the result of those encounters was the birth of a son whose name was Jim. And Jim grew up on the plantation as a young slave, but fell in love with one of Dolly Madison's nieces. And when Dolly learned of this relationship, she was horrified. And so she sold Jim. And as he was being taken away, Corrine pleaded with Jim, "Always remember, you're a Madison." And she told him that because she hoped that the name could help them find each other again someday. Well, they never saw each other again. Jim ended up in Tennessee, and he married, or jumped the broom, with a fellow slave. And one of his children was my great-great-grandfather, Mac. And now, we don't exactly know what happened to Jim, but we do know what happened to Mac. Mac was owned by Jephthah Billingsley. And Jephthah decided that he was going to purchase a wife for Mac. So he purchased a young woman who was probably about 16 years old. Her name was Elizabeth, who had come from Florida. She was owned by Augustus King, but Augustus King agreed to sell Elizabeth to Jephthah so that Mac could have a wife. Now, Emmanuel and Elizabeth ended up having a number of children. And in 1848, the whole family was moved from Gibson County, Tennessee, to Texas, to Bastrop County. And one of their children was my great-grandfather, Mac. Now, Mac was proud that their name had come from a president. So he taught his children to always remember, you're a Madison. You come from a president. So that way the credo, which had once been just a tool to help them find each other again, that they hoped to use, although they never were able to use it as a tool to find each other again. Mac turned the tool into a source of pride. And when they became free, they were taught to make the use of that name and that pride now that they had the chance.
And now, you know, stepping back a moment, here you tell this wonderful story and you've connected all of these people, but it came to you because your mother, of something that your mother told you to do, to become really the griot, the person in the family who's going to continue passing these stories down. And this is really, in many ways, miraculous that you've managed to put this together. And I know it took you years, 20 years, maybe more, of research to find all of this information. It wasn't easy. It wasn't like you could just, you know, follow it step by step. You really had to do a lot of work, right?
I did quite a lot of work because I wanted to get to know my ancestors. You know, the stories are wonderful and inspirational, but I really wanted to get a sense of who these people are and what they had experienced. So I started tracing Mandy's footsteps. So I went to Ghana, West Africa, where Mandy was born. And I went to Baltimore, Maryland, where there is a replica of a slave ship, similar to the one that had carried Mandy so far away from home. And I did not go to Tennessee, but I'm going to go. But I went to Bastrop County, where my ancestors were living at the time of emancipation. And, you know, I followed their footsteps to try to understand who they were. And what I learned about them was that they had remarkable inner strength and a sense of hope, which enabled them to survive, and that they had many talents by which they, as well as many other enslaved Africans, had contributed mightily to this country.
And you tell it so with so much depth of understanding, and I there are points in the story where I feel you must have been crying, because there are points in the story where I'm crying, and I got very emotional sometimes because I thought, one, your ancestors went through it, and then you had to walk in their footsteps and feel, and you managed to do it because it comes through the writing. You felt their pain and their agony and their dreams of something better, and it's, you know, for people who have, like, I've been, of course, to James Madison's home in Montpellier, and it's so beautiful, and right now, you know, it's so peaceful, and it looks so pretty, but to know all this emotion and all this life that was going on in that time, and I was just so taken with your writing, and I would imagine a lot of this was painful for you.
It was very painful, but it was also rewarding. Because I did come to get a sense of how strong these people were, and that when they died, they didn't take those strengths with them. They passed them on to their descendants, including myself and others of us who are alive today. So the pain was tempered with a sense of pride in these people and a sense of pride in myself for having inherited, you know, these, you know, very strong and important characteristics.
Well, I'm looking right now at a picture of Elizabeth Madison, who was born in 1815 and died in 1921. And tell the story about Elizabeth, because it's knowing how much that photograph meant to you and really was one of the powerful things that sent you in this search to understand your family better.
Well, that picture of Elizabeth is the most cherished item that was in the box of family memorabilia that my mother handed over to me when she transferred the responsibility of being the griot onto me. And in fact, I carry that picture in my wallet. And, you know, it sort of reminds me of not just of Elizabeth, but of all of my enslaved ancestors. But Mandy has a family history similar to Mandy's, because she had an ancestor who was captured from Africa. In Elizabeth's case, her ancestor was Katie, and she was captured from what is now Nigeria. But Katie was taken to Florida, and her ancestors were sold, or Katie was sold, because her owner, who was Mr. Jackson, died and left his wife impoverished, and his wife, in order to survive financially, sold off many of her slaves, including Lily, who was Elizabeth's mother. She sold Elizabeth and Lily and to Augustus King. And Augustus King brought her from Florida to Gibson County, and that is where she met Emmanuel that I spoke of earlier. And we have a remarkable document in the box of family memorabilia, and that is Elizabeth's bill of sale. So this document, which is 1834, says that Elizabeth and Emmanuel could choose to stay with either Augustus King or with Jephthah Billingsley after a period of 1 year. And they also had the choice of whether or not they would stay together. And they chose to stay together. So what's so remarkable about this document, it is that because they did stay together, it is tantamount to a marriage certificate, which did not exist in slave populations, you know, in slave couples. They were just sort of put together. But in this case, they had a choice. And it was, you know, and there's a document to prove it. So it's like a marriage license. So that's another treasure that's in the box of family memorabilia. And Elizabeth and Emmanuel were very strong Christians. They had a strong belief in God and Jesus. And they taught their children to, you know, live within the accordance of Jesus' teaching. And it gave them more and more strength to not only endure enslavement, but to overcome it, you know, once they were freed.
Well, your family is remarkable. And one of the things, of course, I want to tell people a little bit before we're going to tell more about the story and about the research, but tell them about yourself. You became, tell them where did you grow up and what did you become? A doctor. So this is pretty great.
Yes. I was actually born in Tucson, Arizona, because my father was stationed there during World War II. And Fort Huachuca was where a number of the black troops were sent. And so that's why I was born in Arizona, and I stayed there until I was about 18 months old. And then we moved to Oakland, California. Well, to make a long story short, my father was a physician, and I followed in his footsteps. He was a general physician, but I specialized in pediatrics. And I worked in Boston for some 30 years as a pediatrician in a private practice and in clinics as well. But I always loved to write.
Well, that's obviously true, because your writing is, it's poetical, actually. It's that kind of writing that I get every once in a while where I just sort of sit back and I say, oh, wow. Well, I have a feeling, and now that you're retired and you've written this first book, I have a feeling that you're going to be writing more books, perhaps some books, you know, for children about about this, because obviously you love children and you know a great deal about them. It's wonderful when you write stories that help children understand not slavery, but just understand how glorious life can be, and how anybody, you know, when somebody like you, you've done this wonderful thing of becoming a pediatrician, and I think it's important to pass this knowledge on to children that they can become anything they want to be. And that's why I was so thrilled when I was reading your work, and I kept saying to myself, well, I have a feeling, I just had a feeling there's going to be some children's books in there somewhere, because I think you want to get this through to people, that there's a wonder out there of what people can become. It's horrible what happened. It's horrible that everything was so terrible. To read about Mandy, I think if people read about Mandy and they have her in their heart, they will look at things a little bit differently and say, you know, we're heading now into 2021, and we have to look beyond color. We have to look beyond that and just be understanding, be grateful for what we have, and then to read wonderful writing like this.
Well, it is my hope that everyone will learn how strong and remarkable enslaved people were. And the takeaway message is that those strengths were passed down to African Americans today. And that there are talents and that should be acknowledged and nurtured and shared.
Exactly, and I love the word nurtured, because there's all this abundance of talent, as you've written about here, and to be nurtured and to be just given the opportunity to flourish like a beautiful flower. That's important, and I think books like this pave the way to open people's eyes. It's funny, you know. When I started this program, I didn't know anything about the publishing world. I didn't actually know any writers. I just sort of started it on a whim, and I didn't have any particular background in the book world, other than the fact that I just love to read. And so I didn't know that there were, you know, even how books were sent out to radio shows, because at first I only interviewed people whose books were already on my bookshelf. I contacted them. I said, I'm reading your book. I want to talk to you. And then after a while, of course, publishers discovered me and authors discovered me. And now I get, you know, dozens of books every week. But one of the things after I had been doing the program a few years, I discovered that I was getting books in that were targeted for February. February reads for African Americans. And the first year I didn't sort of realize why it was. But then after a while I realized, well, I wasn't getting these books other times of the year. Why?
I
refuse to interview African Americans in February because I don't want that. When I get a book, I don't look at you know who the person is. I just want to read a good book, and so I think I just found it very off-putting. I said, I can't do that. I want African American books in January and March and August and December. I don't care. I think that's part of the thing that I'm hoping to get across also to my listeners. It's not 1 month a year. It's all the time.
I'm very, very glad to hear you say that. It's absolutely true.
Yeah, you know, it's just something I think it's very important, and I know the publishers aren't trying to be rude to anybody, and the authors who release their books in February hope that it's going to spur on sales because that's the month that you're supposed to pay attention. Well, no, I'm sorry, that's not the month you're supposed to pay attention. You're supposed to pay attention all year long, and not wait for 1 month out of the year. You know, it didn't make sense to me. And so I just stopped that. I just, whenever I get a good book, I don't care. I don't care about the color, the gender. I just want a good book. And that's what, you know, I've got here. And I'm so glad because I was, you know, if you would have come along in February, I said, no, I'm not going to do a book till March. So I'm glad that we're getting it here in the end of 2020, because I think, as I said, this has been a tumultuous year, a crazy year, but in many ways, people are ready to think harder about a subject like this.
And you've had some wonderful guests on your show. Of all ages.
Yeah, I've had 6-year-olds, and of course I've had I just got my I mentioned to you in an email about Davin Miller, who was on last week, and he is now going to be a regular contributor to Joy on Paper. He's going once a month. He's going to recommend books for us, and that's part of the whole thing of being inclusive, having fun, reading books, making everybody, you know, just enjoy reading. And I know that Davin Miller is going to be doing a terrific job with his recommendations. And last week he gave us a bunch. And I know at some point you're going to write a children's book, and he's going to be recommending your children's book.
Yeah, I do plan to write children's books. I'm beginning work on a picture book.
I knew it. See, when I see a great author, and I know that she's got a way with words, and you have this, your words are the way that you write is so beautiful. I knew that you couldn't resist it. You had to continue writing.
Yes, I'm going to write for different ages.
Good.
So after the children's book will focus more on oral history and the importance of it. But I also want to write something for early readers so they can begin to grasp our history of slavery in a way that will be appropriate for their age. And then I want to write a young adult book, which will grapple with some of the real issues of slavery, of people owning people. Because the book that we're discussing, The Other Madison, The Lost History of President's Black Family, the audience, and this is going to sound strange, but the audience I see as African-American parents. But the book is actually written for their children. So I want to discuss it as a family. But I also want to write a young adult and early readers book so that young African-Americans can begin to think about these issues independently and for themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. Mm-hmm. But I think it's actually for all parents, and it doesn't matter what color you are. All parents should read this book because it will open their eyes and they will be able to talk about the subject in a more intelligent manner and with more heart and with more soul. It's not for just African-American parents. All parents across America should get this book, should read it, and then they really can talk to their children. And they can talk to their children about their family background, but they can add this depth of knowledge into the African-American experience and why it's something that we can't forget and that we should cherish the strength that African-Americans have, and also the great successes. Somebody like you and your father, you become doctors, which is sort of one of the things that every, you know, American parents say, oh, become a doctor or become a lawyer. And it's this beautiful success of actually doing it, and that we want to get beyond the horror and the sadness, and we want everyone to just be better people.
Well, you know, I do agree with you that the book should be read by everyone. But what I wanted to accomplish was for African Americans to really embrace their slave ancestry. And I guess for other Americans, I want them to respect slaves and enslaved people. I'm trying, you know, I just want to back up a little bit right there, because I said I call people slaves. And that is something I am working to get beyond, because these were enslaved people. When you say it's slave, it makes them more objectified. But these were people who were in a condition that was called enslavement. But what I was going to say before I backed up and corrected myself is that while I want African Americans to embrace their slave ancestry, as I said, I want other Americans to really respect and honor all that enslaved people did to this country. And as a descendant of President James Madison, I want to draw attention to the fact that without the labor of enslaved people, he would not have been able to go off to what is now Princeton University and study political philosophers and come up with the basis for our Constitution. And without that Constitution, the United States of America would not have been as successful worldwide. And it's all because the slaves did the day-to-day work and allowed him the luxury, the freedom of learning and of really helping to build this country.
And also, I hope that all African Americans who read this book will realize the importance of all of the stories that they have right now in their heads, and how many more of these wonderful books could be written if they would just put the material together like you did. And in your case, it takes time to do this kind of research, but it's well worth it. And preserve all of your memorabilia. Preserve this, because it really makes it easier for, at least you had something to work with, which unfortunately many, many people don't. But you had wonderful things that your family had told these stories and kept these stories going. And, you know, Betty Kearse, I think you've done a wonderful job with this book. And I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And do you have a website where you want people to go and where they can find out more information?
Yes. My website is www.betty, and that's spelled B-E-T-T-Y-E, Kearse, that's K-E-A-R-S-E.com. So it's Betty with an E, Kearse.com.
And on Facebook, are you under the other Madisons?
I do have an author page, which is the other Madison.
Okay. Well,
and
people,
I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter.
Yeah, and all the other stuff. So people can find you. And I'm sure that once we get over this pandemic-y period, you're going to start making tours across America, talking to more people and getting encouraging more people to write their stories, because you've done a beautiful job with this book. And I, again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
I just want to share one more quick thing.
Okay.
And that I'm finishing up a documentary film based on my book.
Great.
That will be available on PBS and other, like Amazon Prime.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to seeing that. And just everybody, this is a book well worth getting for everybody, not just for African Americans, and not just in February, any time of the year. This is a great book, The Other Madisons, The Lost History of a President's Black Family. Again, thank you very much for being on Joy on Paper.
Thank you, Patsy.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Wow. Bye-bye.
Okay, it is a heart-rending book, I tell you. There are sections there. She writes, she is an incredible writer. Now, some of you know, I was planning to have Tara Lush on today to talk about Grounds for Murder, a book about the first in her coffee series. And I love coffee, and I was really looking for a little perk from her. Unfortunately, she wasn't able to make it today. So I'm going to do a commercial, and when we'll do commercials, and then we'll come right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I only have a few minutes, but I want to take a few minutes just to talk a little bit about the author and the book that was supposed to be on right now, but unfortunately, Tara Lush is not able to join me today, but I want to talk about Grounds for Murder. It's the first in her Coffee Lovers Mystery series, and of all the books I've read this year, I would say it's the first chapter has to be one of the top three. This first chapter is so good. I just, when I get a book like that, when I marvel at a book and I say, whoa, baby, I love this book. Just, now, of course, any book about coffee will get me first. I suppose people could just write books about coffee, and I will do it because it just gives me a kick. I'm a Youper, and Finns drink more coffee than any other people in the world. They drink tons. I think something like 28 pounds of coffee a year. Per person. And that's true. And that's the same for Youpers. So we all follow this same tradition. We drink a lot of coffee. And Panera's did a stupid thing when they gave me that $8, you can have all you want coffee. So far in December, I've already had over $58 worth of coffee from Panera's, all for $8. This is a plug for them. They have to ask people before they sell you this Panera's all-you-can-drink coffee. They have to ask, are you a Finn? And if you're a Finn, they have to say, okay, I'm sorry, we don't sell this subscription to our coffee club for $8 because you're going to bankrupt us. But I just want to talk about this book. You know, Grounds for Coffee, when you're looking for a perfect first chapter, particularly of a book like this, a cozy mystery, this has to be an example that everybody should follow. One word after another is just perfect. Description of the location. It's set in Florida. I'm not going to tell too much about it because I don't want to give it all away right now until she is able to get back on. And I've got such a full schedule for January. I don't know where I'm going to fit her, but I'm going to have to find a time because I love her writing. She's got a journalist background, so she obviously knows how to put words together, and she writes romance novels, which have been very successful. This looks like her first sort of footstep into the world of cozy mysteries, and it is just so good. In really a few lines, a few words, she builds up the character. She introduces us to a character. She introduces us to a location. She makes everything so visual that by the end of the first chapter, you feel as if you are in her coffee shop, which is called Purgatory, by the way, which I love that name. But everything, every little detail, whether she's talking about the color of the cups, about how the cups are piled up on the coffee machine, how they're nested, she uses each word is just perfect. And her descriptions of people, in just a few little words, she manages to describe the people so that you see them, so that, for example, she has a character, Italian guy, but in a few little words, she builds this character up So we really know him and we understand him and we actually want to know more about him. So, and it's just really brilliant writing. When I compliment an author, when I say an author is really, you know, just so strong. And this is what she is. She's a strong writer, knows what she's doing. She doesn't hesitate to make up words. She even makes up words. I think they're made up. And she also sent me on a little wild chase, checking out some of the stuff that she has in the first chapter. And in the end, it's all memorable. And that's what you want. You want memorable characters. You want characters. I cared immediately within a few paragraphs about the character, her main character. I wanted to know more about her. And altogether, a very, very wonderful book. And I will have Tara Lush back. I will have Tara Lush on. I will give her another date. And we'll talk about Grounds for Murder. But definitely, if you're looking for a real perk up, I think this book is great, and the first in a series of, I'm sure, going to be a wonderful, wonderful series. Oh boy, can you imagine? We're getting to the end of 2020. On Thursday, I'm going to have Christopher Zaida back. He was on just before Christmas, and I didn't give him enough time to talk about his book, and I want I'm going to have him back, and we're going to be talking more about that. And I've got a whole lineup I'll talk to you more about on Thursday. What a upcoming year. All sorts of wonderful, wonderful authors are going to be on Joy on Paper. This is the 104th program of the year, so you can imagine I've spoken to almost 200. A few authors I gave an hour to, so I didn't quite do 200, but pretty near. So I've certainly learned a lot. Anyway, everybody, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. And, of course, a streaming video is going to be Lee Child and Andrew Child. That's going to be coming up in the new year. My goodness, Jack Reacher on streaming video. And he's actually going to be 6'4", 200 pounds, and I guess a heck of a guy, like Lee Child himself. Okay, everybody, say something nice to somebody. Today I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. Thank you for everything. Wow, what a day. Everybody, bye-bye now.